All right, well, let's see. This is a little new conversation with the new mask. So which is more distracting, me doing this or me having this thing hanging on here the whole time? I don't know. That's kind of hard to tell. Thank you, Leslie. Thank you for sharing, and thank you for your leadership and all of your hard work. And thank you for supporting her. There are not many churches, Baptist churches, that are as supportive of women following their callings and women being in professional ministry, women being ordained. And you have been a supporter of Leslie's, of Susie Webb's, of so many others in our church history, and we are thankful for that. Everybody gotten all their Christmas presents? I mentioned that because I'm still waiting on one. I'm still waiting on one. I have a Christmas gift that I ordered for one of my children and still not here yet. Now, I do know that it's January the 9th, but I do also know it takes some gifts a little bit longer to arrive than others. So why is it taking so long? I've done a lot of research and I think I figured out the problem. The problem is the gift that I ordered, it's a small gift, but it's something special. It's coming from a small town located in the Somerset section of England. And apparently when something is located farther away, it takes longer to get to you. Who knew how that works? I mean, except for Amazon, but this is not Amazon. Now, the good news for me and for my lovely child who is receiving this gift is it should arrive sometime before January 24th. Which is still within a month of Christmas, so right, I'm still good. What on earth did we get one of our children from Somerset, England? Well, you'll just have to wait. I can't tell you. Our still traveling package reminds me of the Magi, also known as the wise men. The late arrivals of Christmas. Let's read, if you would, Matthew 2, 1 through 12, the story of the Magi, the wise men. Matthew 2, 1 through 12. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." And when Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And gathering together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he began to inquire of them where the Christ was to be born. And they said to him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the leaders of Judah. For out of you shall come forth a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod secretly called the Magi and ascertained from them the time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go make careful search for the child, and when you have found him, report to me, so that I too may come and worship him.' And having heard the king, they went their way, and lo, the star which they had seen in the east went on before them until it came and stood over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And they came into the house and saw the child with Mary, his mother. And they fell down and worshipped him. And opening their treasures, they presented to him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed for their country by another way." Before we dive in too deep, I want you to notice what's said in verse 11. Verse 11, it says, the wise men came to the house where Jesus was staying. They came to the house where Jesus was staying. So in spite of what we often see in our manger scenes and our Christmas pageants, the wise men did not show up at the stable. They arrived long after the shepherds, the angels, the animals, and everyone else. Jesus has settled into a house with his family, and life has returned to some level of normalcy, according to what the text tells us. Some scholars suggest that The wise men arrived as late as 18 to 24 months after Jesus was born. That makes my wait for the Christmas package seem a lot shorter, doesn't it? 18 to 24 months. The wise men were not at the stable. They came later, many months later. Now, I admit, friends, this is a pet peeve of mine. I don't like seeing the wise men in manger scenes. What's the big deal? Why is that such a pet peeve? It's still the Christmas story. Having the wise men at the stable is close enough, right? Well, I think it's important that we tell the story of Jesus as accurately as we can, that we look at the whole of the Bible as accurately as we can, that we value facts and truth, even in the smallest ways, as accurately as we can. Many of us, when we raised our children, we talked to them about little white lies, and we began to teach them that truth mattered even in the smallest circumstances. So maybe the case then is that it matters for us to be accurate in telling the story of Jesus, and that really at Christmas we actually have a few different narratives, a few different episodes to the story. And this one about the wise guys, this one comes nearly 2 years later. Why does it matter to tell the story correctly? Well, first, I think it honors people when we tell their story as accurately as possible. Sharing real facts, the truth about people, conveys that you really value and listen to them. Quick example. We've already recognized Leslie Spitzer this morning. Leslie's my friend. What if I introduced her to you for the first time and told you that she is a proud graduate of the University of Virginia? She's married to a wonderful guy named Ron, and she has children that are in the 9th and the 6th grade. What would that mean? Well, if I did so, it would show a stunning lack of regard for Leslie and her story, because Leslie is a proud Virginia Tech alum, and there's not anybody in this room that's going to say, well, Virginia Tech, Virginia, they're both in Virginia, right? It doesn't matter. Nobody in this room is going to say that, because in Virginia, guess what? It does matter. She's married to Rob, not Ron, and trust me, that matters. And her children are in 11th grade and 8th grade. Getting a child's age right matters. If a person's valuable to you, you value their story. You treasure the facts, likes, fears, and dreams of your friend. Because since your friend matters, telling her story accurately matters. Now, likewise, if the story of Jesus is valuable to us, telling that story accurately matters, because Jesus is our greatest treasure and worth the investment of giving our best storytelling. Now, this may seem insignificant, but only getting portions of Jesus' message right while misconstruing the full breadth of Jesus' story hampers the witness of the church. Accuracy and conveying the story of Jesus is of vital value for serious Christ followers. But we understand something else in our culture, don't we? In our culture that is playing loosely with facts, we understand that ignoring facts, or worse, reshaping facts, leads to dangerous outcomes. We understand in a culture where facts are getting thrown around and thrown out quickly how important it is to be accurate with facts. Now, we all have our interpretations of things, as we should. But those interpretations should be based on accurate, truthful facts in order for those interpretations to have any level of validity. Case in point, for decades, history books ignored the horrors of slavery in the American South by saying that many slaves live happy lives that were better than the lives they lived in Africa. From this, you get some depictions of things, like from a couple of decades ago, actually more than a couple of decades ago, because I'm older than I think I am. You get things like Song of the South from Disney. that depict this kind of history and understanding of slavery. That was not accurate, but became the tale that the history books told. And even more recently, right, we are fighting as a nation about what actually happened on January 6th. The pictures are pretty clear. People broke into the Capitol building, many of them carrying Christian symbols, and many others carrying symbols of white supremacy. Those facts are pretty clear. There are other facts that are pretty clear. Now, yes, we get to interpret what that means. We should interpret what that means. All of us come at things from different perspectives. But friends, we don't get to reshape facts just because we don't like them. We don't get to reshape facts or ignore facts just because we think they may not matter that much. Facts are important, which is why when I try to research things and understand things, I try to get as close to primary sources as I can. I want to read the actual words of what happened in places rather than listening to what other people tell me about them. Of course, then we look at interpretations as well, but only after we look at the actual primary sources. I am, by college major, a historian at root. That's what I try and do. But what this gets to the point of is that facts matter. Randy, we're a long way from the wise men. Yeah, okay, we are. But friends, if we tell our children that little white lies actually matter, then we need to be serious about the facts that we understand about the world and taking them seriously. And we need to be serious about how we tell the story of Jesus. Because, friends, far too many followers of Jesus talk about Jesus in a way they prefer that might not actually fit what we see in the text. Now, finally, if we gloss over the reality that the Magi arrived much later than the other characters of the Christmas story, we miss some valuable lessons. So let's look at the wise men just a little deeper. First of all, they're magi and wise men. We'll get to that a little bit. Those are not synonymous terms, but there are two terms that we've gotten to call them. First thing, let's think about this. We do not know how many magi came to the house that night or that day. We typically think it was three. They even have names in tradition. We think it's three because there were three gifts: gold, frankincense, and myrrh, which are extremely practical gifts for a young peasant family. By the way, what store do you register for frankincense at? Anybody know? I mean, I don't quite know. We're not sure how many wise men there were, but we do know a couple of things about their identity. The first thing is they were not kings, in spite of the song, which, by the way, I love the song. We Three Kings, you've heard the song? I love the song. I'm looking forward to hearing Wendy play it in just a little bit. The wise men were magi. And magi were a learned class of priests of Middle Eastern peoples in this era, particularly from Persia, Iraq, that era of the world. The magi were priests of Zoroastrianism, a religion of the Persians which actually still exists. They were respected keepers of wisdom. They were folks that people sought for truth. Rulers and kings would come to them to look to them for their counsel. Now, their wisdom was not based on a high IQ, GPA, or SAT score, or a lot of degrees. Their wisdom was based in the fact that they spent their days seeking truth and pondering mystery, particularly by looking at the stars. They interpreted celestial events, particularly special heavenly happenings, as indicating the birth of someone significant. And they saw this incredible star appear. This incredible star that we think of at Christmas time, they saw the star appear, and they were so amazed by it that they put down everything, and they decided to follow the star. They were living practitioners of two pithy yet profound parables that Jesus told. These parables, Matthew 13, verses 44 through 46, two parables and only three verses. Jesus was very succinct with these. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought the field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and bought it. These wise men were like these persons Jesus talked about who saw this incredible happening in the heavens, and they said, "We have never seen anything like this in our life. This king that has been born, that is indicated by this star, must be the king of all. And we would be remiss if we didn't drop everything in our lives and begin right now following the star." They did not know who had been born. All they knew and understood was that great heavenly happenings were indicators of royalty of some form being born. And they'd never seen a heavenly happening as beautiful as the star, as big as this star. And they decided that everything in their life was worth putting on hold to find out what was happening and who had been born. Think about it just for a moment. Think about their courage. Think about what they gave up. Family, career, influence, wealth, religion. They're going to pursue a king that is of a completely different religious background than theirs. They gave up meeting with their Sunday school classes, hanging out with their friends. They left everything behind to journey 600 miles on the backs of camels to a country they, as far as we know, where they had never been, a culture very different from their own. They would face a route plagued with robbers and natural dangers, all while carrying significant and expensive gifts. They didn't trust anybody to ship them. They wanted them to get there on time. When they got there. And why did they do this? To worship the newborn king. A king more profound than any they had ever imagined. They gave up everything to seek and worship the Son of God. I'm astounded by their courage and by their faith. I'm actually a little ashamed because I have to ask myself the question, what have I given up in my life to worship Jesus? Have I ever thrown my full self into such costly worship? And yet, isn't this what Jesus tells us to do? Whoever loses their life for my sake will surely find it. But whoever gains his life and spends his life trying to gain and trying to hold on to will lose their life. What have you given up to pursue Jesus? What have you given up to fully embrace God with the fullness of your life? Sadly, too many times, American Christians like us, we expect worshiping God to be about us. We want our worship services done our way when we approve of what is preached, sung, and played. But what if fully worshiping Jesus isn't about attending an event to have our emotional needs satisfied? What if worshiping Jesus demands that we throw caution to the wind, to engage a never-ending journey toward God, regardless of who comes with us and what it cost us? Because that's what the wise guys did. Nothing is worth keeping if it prevents us from the pursuit of God. Even more amazing than the sacrificial obedience from the wise men is the message that God sends to creation by calling the Magi. God did not call the wealthy religious leaders of Jerusalem with the great star. In fact, the wondrous star shone in the sky around Jerusalem as well, and the religious leaders of Judaism, the ones who studied God's word zealously, they missed what God was doing. As a matter of fact, they had to go search the word to even find out where the king was supposed to be born. They missed the star standing right over their heads and had to be told that the newborn king was born by a Zoroastrian priest from 600 miles away. It's hardly the first time religious and political leaders would have missed and ignore the truth of God and Jesus. But these foreign priests of another religion, they did not miss God's revelation. The wealthy, sophisticated religious persons that saw the signs of God and heard the voice of the Spirit were not even Jewish. They were foreigners, Gentiles, practitioners and priests of what we would call a pagan religion. They did not know the stories of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They did not know about Moses. They did not follow the Ten Commandments. They didn't know them. And yet these outsiders were the ones that God called to come by the way of a star to see the newborn king. These outsiders knew how to see the work that God was doing in the world. The people of God missed God's work entirely. This fact should remind church people like us to be especially careful when we assume to know exactly what God is doing. God is bigger than our imagination. As I've said, I'm moved by the story of the wise men. It's a story that should be told more fully, more clearly. It should be given its own moment. And in some ways, around the world, it is. For generations, countless followers of Jesus have celebrated January 6th as the day of Epiphany. Epiphany means revealing. It's the day where the church celebrates with a great feast, I might add, the revealing of God to the whole world in Jesus Christ. It's the day where the wise men take center stage. Why? Because on Epiphany we recognize that God came to the world in Jesus Christ for everybody. The earth-shaking truth in the story of the wise men is that all people are invited equally toward Jesus. Not only church people, not persons who are white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, not only people who vote like you, not only Americans, everyone, white, black, outcast, Muslim, Hindu, Russian, Chinese, persons whose lives we would consider moral lives and persons whose lifestyles and identity you might even find repugnant. All are invited to come and worship the newborn king without caveat, without favoritism, only with the invitation to come follow the star, to follow the Son of God. Interestingly enough, in the story of the Magi, the ones who thought they were God's favorites ended up attacking God's work. More on that next week as we focus on Herod. For today, let us be reminded of the final lesson from the Magi. God doesn't need the religiously pious people to do God's work. God will work with whoever responds to his call, to whoever will follow Jesus and seek the way of Jesus in the world. Sometimes participants in the church, sometimes ministers in the church, can be so busy with their church work that they miss God revealing himself to the world. Be careful. God has a way of showing up in ways that we do not expect. Just ask the Magi. I'm mindful, friends, that this table is a way that God calls us in a way that his disciples did not expect. You see, back in the day, when they were surrounded by Jesus at this table, the disciples were looking for Jesus to come and inaugurate a military revolution and throw off the command of Rome. But Jesus didn't come to kick out the Romans. He came to die on a cross of the Romans. And that death on the cross and the resurrection that ensued, that is where Jesus won his victory. Not a victory over hordes of armies, but a victory over sin, evil, death, and a victory that opened the way for everyone, all human beings, to come back into relationship with God. It took a long while for the disciples to understand that the deliverance of Jesus they needed was far bigger than anything they ever imagined. This table reminds us, with bread and juice, that the broken body and spilled blood of Jesus open up a doorway for everyone to come back to God, if they so choose. This meal is bigger than we think, because the purposes of God are greater than we can comprehend. And the love of God is bigger than any we've ever imagined. On the night in which Jesus was betrayed, he took bread, and when he'd given thanks, he broke it, saying, "Friends, take and eat. This is my body, which was given for you. Do this in remembrance of me."